Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, Tales of a Cocktail Edition.
Hey, folks, we're back. It's a goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans. It is episode 57, the big booze festival. Tales of the Cocktail is happening as we speak. In fact, it's winding up.
It's winding up.
This is the last day of the Tales of the Cocktail. And with us right now, we have Patrick Hernandez of Relaison Brewery. Distillery. Right, exactly. You guys are on Broad Street, right?
Yep,
right here in New Orleans, right?
South Broad in Washington.
That's great. And can you tell us a little bit about the name and how you guys got started?
Sure. The name Relaison actually means the French Creole word for the sugarcane harvest. It's an nice. Old term that we found in some primary documents dating back to 1892. Not really used anymore, so we figured it would be really representative of our brand and what we're doing. So we got started as an idea about 4 years ago now. My business partner, Andrew Lofeld, had been working at a whiskey distillery, making bourbon, mostly in New York, in Brooklyn. He had been making whiskey for a while and started in homebrewing and really wanted to get into rum. There's a lot more you can do with rum and explore. Mm-hmm. There aren't many regulations and we felt like people were abusing that.
How so?
A lot of things can be added to rum and it's still considered rum. Whereas, whiskey is to be bourbon, it's 51% corn, it has to be in the barrel with a certain strength. And so rum, we really wanted to go super old school. We're using pot stills exclusively, 100% Louisiana molasses,
nice.
Long fermentations.
Can you explain what a pot still is in contrast to other stills?
Sure, so a pot still is the most basic form of still. It's the oldest as well. It's literally, it could just be a pot on top of a fire that boils the wash that's in it. The vapors come up through a copper pipe that's attached to the top, and then you cool the outside of the pipe, and it condenses the alcohol.
And how do you, what is the basic product that you get from Thibodeau in order to, is it just raw sugarcane? Do you start with the raw sugarcane?
What is it about Louisiana molasses?
So you get the molasses from them.
If we got the sugarcane from them, we would need much larger facility.
right, of course.
So we get grade B molasses, which is one run of the molasses before blackstrap.
Yeah.
And so blackstrap is the typical byproduct when producing sugar. So it starts as sugarcane juice, they boil it, and then run it a couple of times to take out the sugar.
Right.
And so the first run of the molasses is grade A, the second run is grade B, and then you get blackstrap at the end. And blackstrap has a lot more ash content, less sugar to it, and usually sugar refineries wouldn't save any of the grade B. They would just keep it going until it reaches blackstrap, so they get the most sugar out of it.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh. But being local, and this is a common around Louisiana with distilleries, the sugar refineries and mills will save some of that better molasses for us.
Oh, really?
We have to get it in very large amounts at a time. We get an 18-wheeler pull up to our tiny little distillery and pump about 3,000 gallons of molasses into two giant tanks we have. And that'll last us about 6 months.
Wow. Nice.
That's
nice.
It's a really amazing process. How did that kind of relationship start? Is that something that's like a time tradition or something that you guys sort of made that relationship happen? Or
No, they had been doing it for other distilleries around Louisiana. Old New Orleans gets their molasses from the same mill as we do. So they're really willing to help local products and save that for us.
My perception is that rum distilleries are few and far between in the U.S. Is that correct?
That is.
Is most of it happening down here?
Yeah, so in the last couple of years especially, there have been a lot more rum distilleries popping up. And so across the country, but also in Louisiana, which is the natural home for it.
We have four now, I think, right?
We have Old New Orleans, us, Lula, which is a micro distillery. It's also a restaurant, so they don't distribute. They only sell their product on site.
Oh, I see. Okay. There's Bayou.
Bayou.
Right. And there's one in Baton Rouge, too.
Yeah, so one in Baton Rouge, Cane Land in Baton Rouge just opened up. Yeah. There's Donner Pelche in Thibodeau.
Oh, that's right.
And I believe that Cajun Spirits over on Poydras is releasing a rum soon.
Huh. Okay, so I don't know, it's by my count, that's trend. Like six or seven, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
And how are you guys doing? Like, are you guys primarily, what's your primary source of business? Is it restaurants or bars or?
Restaurants and bars.
We also retail.
Have a, yeah. We have a tasting room that is open 4 days a week. And so we are able to sell bottles out of there, as well as on tours, we can give pours. But we're primarily distribution focused.
Yeah.
And so we'll be, we're around New Orleans in both retail and on-site.
Yeah, nice. Well, here's what I'm thinking, Jeff, Patrick, and Spencer. I think we should taste a little of the product, and then I'd like to then segue into what your experience has been with Tales of the Cocktail.
Absolutely.
But should we pour some of the product that you brought
sure.
in?
Sure.
We've got some cups right over here. We have ice if you need it, if you don't want to drink it straight, neat. We've got these cups over here.
And what do we have? Because I see we have three. We have a regular, we have a bottle of clear rum.
Yes.
Right? And then we have two small bottles here as well.
Yes, the two small bottles are the same thing. So that's an overproof that we just bottled a week and a half ago. So it'll be hitting shelves soon. Right now it's only available in our tasting room.
Ah, okay.
So
what are we drinking first?
Overproof just means a higher
proof. A higher proof. Right? And it has some different characteristics to it, which we can get into once we're tasting. But right
here
is our...
The label's beautiful.
Thank you. So this is our flagship white rum. And like we always tell people, it's a white rum. It's not a light rum, and you'll probably get a whiff of it in a second.
How is that?
The bottle is very melodic when the cork comes out. By the way,
yeah, that sound was
yeah.
Really
the
nice.
Sound is great.
Cork.
Yeah, it's a great. That's a great jug band bottle right there.
So what are the characteristics Ooh. We're looking for with this?
So the primary two notes that I get off the top are molasses.
Yes.
There's an ash, right? Or woodiness. Or something.
Yeah. There's a lot of molasses in the nose. When you take a taste, it's going to be both really smoky and really
smoky.
Grassy at the same time.
Really
and
smoky.
Those
it's
are.
Delicious. You don't want to mix this with a Coca-Cola, do you? You don't want to drink this straight.
No.
You want to drink straight?
You can definitely put it in a cocktail.
It's like a whiskey. Like
wow.
Maybe with soda, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love it with soda. And it's one of the great things about it is it will really hold up to strong flavors in cocktails. So you can do a lot
it's
of
really
different
good.
Things with it.
Spencer, what do you think, bro?
Got a lot of flavor.
Yeah, it really does. And it does have those two signature notes that you're mm-hmm. talking about.
Yeah, and to
the
that...
The front and the back end.
That's one of the things that we feel really differentiates us. We're not using your typical... yeast. We're actually using yeast that were intended for beer.
Really?
Yeah.
And why is that?
It produces a lot more flavor, and it takes a longer fermentation. It's less efficient, but we feel like it really produces those two notes that you're seeing. And we do separate fermentations of each yeast, and then blend after we distill them.
And so after the distilling process, there's an aging process.
We have an aged product that will be out later this year, maybe, mm-hmm. depending on if we think it's ready. But what you're drinking here is completely unaged.
Completely unaged.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is...
It's a lot of flavor for not sitting in a barrel.
Yeah, so what's the process?
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, if just tasting this, I would assume...
It was aged.
That it was aged.
That's kind of tripping me out right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we don't add anything to it in terms of...
That's insane.
Flavoring, coloring, we don't chill filter it or carbon filter it. And it's really the pot stills as well that allow it to capture that flavor. So to your question that you asked a minute ago about the difference in stills is pot stills are generally less efficient and take longer to distill
right.
Versus a column still, which is much more efficient. It's what you are required to use for vodka because it can strip out a more neutral spirit.
Right.
But since it is so efficient, it strips out all those flavors and separates the alcohol from any other compounds that might get stuck in this with the pot still.
And what are the pot stills made of?
Stainless steel.
It's stainless steel.
The bodies, and then a copper head.
And a copper head. Did you, were they made custom for you guys, or did you?
No, we get them from a producer up in Western Kentucky called Hillbilly Stills.
We have that's a good brand.
Yeah.
That's
good. We have 526.
We're tagging them.
Yeah, 526-gallon stills, and so they're super tiny compared to most commercial distilleries. Which is why we have five of them, but still that's a pretty small system. And they do make larger ones, but those really started for, you know, probably the upper end of hobbyists could use one.
Right. You're with a distributor here locally?
International Wine and Spirits.
You're with International. Oh, good. Yeah, that's good.
Patrick, let me ask you, man, how did you get into this field? You said you're from Morgan City, right?
I am from Morgan City. I left the state to go to college, which is where I met my business partner.
Okay, where'd you go?
University of Pennsylvania.
All right.
So we met there, and after graduating, I went off into the field of private equity, and he went into distilling. And you know, after a few years in New York, I guess we met up for a drink, and he was telling me about this crazy idea he had, and you know, he wanted to have his own rum distillery, and he was playing around with a couple different locations, one being Philly, where he's from, but Florida and Louisiana had better access to sugarcane, and so there were definitely some perks of that. Florida's,
and you're from here, so that helps.
I'm from here. Florida
is a little bit.
Yeah, Florida didn't really have friendly laws for new distilleries get up and running.
And Louisiana does
more so, and they changed that. I'd say about 3 or 4 years ago now. Allowing us to sell out of our tasting room, which is a big help when you're first getting started. And before you have a distributor, you can get a little bit of money coming in.
That's right, yeah.
And taste people, and distributors even. You can invite them over and taste your product and all that. Yeah.
So that was one of the factors that made him want to explore New Orleans, but he had actually never been.
Oh, wow.
So I called him up the next day, and I said, I just found some flights to New Orleans. How do you feel about these days?
Nice. And how are you guys doing so far? I mean, in terms of your marketing and penetration and sales and whatnot.
It's been a whirlwind. We started production at the end of November and had about 2 months of really refining the flavor profile we wanted. We tried.
This is brand new.
That's insane.
We narrowed, or we tried about 7 different yeasts in 14 styles in the beginning, and after we had distilled and fermented everything, we sat down with a couple different groups of people over the course of 2 weeks and slowly narrowed it down until we found the finalists, basically, and then each two of them, which ended up in the final product, really each had a defining characteristic that we liked, and so we said, well, what if we blend them? And so, you know, they're both white rums, just different yeasts, like I said, fermented separately, and they each bring something really, really strong to the table.
God, it's got such a great aftertaste, too.
It really does.
Yeah, it just lingers in your mouth. You know, it's fantastic.
I'm kind of buzzed, because it's telling us the cocktail it's the last day.
That's right.
And I've been working a lot, and you have as well. And we should segue into that, but I probably got like 2 or 3 hours of sleep and just sipping on this rum, I'm getting punchy. So Patrick, what can you tell us about your, we'll taste this other thing in a second, this other thing, your other product. How did you come to a decision to involve yourself in Tales of the Cocktail, given the fact that you just started in November? Was that kind of a big leap for you guys to or was it just a natural fit, or?
It was definitely a natural fit. You know, we've been attendees in the past just to, you know, get a sense of the culture and what people are looking for, and really try to just, you know, be in the mindset of, it's such a diverse population that comes. It's bartenders, bar owners, restaurant owners, distillers,
distributors.
So we really have been attending for the past couple of years, just wanting to attend seminars and gather as much as we could from it. So this year was a natural fit for us to participate as one of the distilleries included in the Meet the Distillers happy hour at the Sheraton. That was over on Thursday as part of Tales. And Tales also this year had a big local push.
Is that right?
Yeah, they've been really good about promoting us and other distilleries that have been a part of Tales and driving traffic to the distilleries throughout the week. So we've been offering tours every day.
That's great.
Yeah, that's been busy. People have been coming out to Broad and Washington.
It's been good, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
A lot of out-of-towners.
Yeah.
Can you give us a sense of the scale? Because for a lot of people out there listening, and I'm thinking about our buddy from the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amsterdam. What's our name? Phil.
Yeah.
AP.
AP.
Thinking about AP.
Amsterdam Philip.
All day AP.
All day AP. The scale of this event, it's like half conference, trade show, and half festival. Is that how you would maybe describe it, Patrick?
I mean, that's a good way to describe it.
It's a professional festival.
Yes, it is definitely very active. There's always something to do.
There's like 30,000 people come in town for it.
Yeah.
It would be primarily bartenders, distributors, etc.
It's a mix, yeah. And even just cocktail enthusiasts.
Right.
It really has grown into something that anyone can find plenty to do.
There's nothing like it anywhere else in the world right
now. It's truly like the only hybrid trade show / festival that I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you can think of another. I don't know.
I can't.
Is there like a Harley Davidson festival somewhere?
Probably.
Probably, yeah. You know, but I mean, but that doesn't encompass the entire.
Is NES like, or whatever?
Well, it's like the only industry event that anyone can technology thing.
Well, I mean, there's like the producers conference, which is, I mean, it's great if you're in television and film and whatnot, you know, and you get to check out all the gear, but it's not like this, you know, like nobody outside of television is going to want to participate. This festival has the unique aspect to it that people, the general public, just signs up and goes because it's booze.
Yeah, it's not just industry insiders, like you were saying, cocktail enthusiasts.
Yeah.
We actually got it's goodlifebabe.com, Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, we got a media pass. In our inbox on our Gmail account, it's goodlifebabe@gmail.com, head us up, was flooded with like 48 invitations to like 9 a.m. tasting, 10 a.m. tasting,
so
11 a.m.
coordinate
tasting.
Anything, right.
And so I'm working here at the Contemporary Arts Center, and I did a party for Altos Tequila on Wednesday, and then Diageo brands, which include like Tanqueray and Don Julio and Bullet Bourbon, amongst others, last night with Snoop Dogg playing. So I've had a long week, I'm punchy. But bartenders can handle their fucking booze.
Oh, yes.
I'm just saying, like, at 1 in the morning last night, as people were finally out of here, these people have been drinking for 4 straight days nonstop, and we didn't have a problem. It's just a good crowd.
Yeah, I was there, and it was really easy to leave. There wasn't, no one was pushing.
What'd you think about the Snoop performance?
It was fun.
I thought, because we were like, he might just come out and just say some words and mumble and have his DJ play, because he's like this generation's Bob Dylan. Like 20 years ago, you never know what Bob Dylan you were going to get. I'm aging myself. But Snoop Dogg, you just don't, for this kind of deal where it's like an endorsement gig, he's here because Tanqueray, he's an endorsement, he's a, what do you call it?
The industry.
Yeah. Well, he endorses Tanqueray.
Right.
Right. So that's the reason he was here. And so the whole thing running up to the show was like, no idea what to expect. And it came out right on time, right at 11 o'clock when scheduled.
Yep.
He took the photo opportunities for like 5 minutes with the special folks backstage.
Right.
He came out and he played his greatest hits.
Yeah.
It's exactly what everyone wanted.
I feel like he's a little more personable than most other rappers.
What's that?
I feel like Snoop Dogg's a little more personable than most other rappers, though.
He definitely comes off that way, doesn't he? I mean, yeah. I think that's probably legit. Yeah.
He's got that vibe.
And his crew was cool. Can I tell you?
I mean,
him,
he goes on Martha Stewart.
He goes on Martha
Stewart.
I had his production crew in our dressing rooms. And look, we're a multidisciplinary art center that's pretty straight-laced. And I just had to tell people, I'm like, I can't tell them not to smoke. They're like, what are you talking about? We have no smoking in our dressing rooms. I'm like, if I tell them not to smoke, it's going to be worse. If I ask them to mitigate their smoking.
Right.
So I was like, hey, you can smoke, but do me a favor.
Right, just keep
a little water in a cup and just ash out as much as you can. Try and not fill the room with smoke. And just try and be as respectful as you can. Because we do have it. And everyone looked at me like I was fucking nuts, the people on the staff here, that's the ground rules that I laid out. I was like, believe me, if we told them not to smoke, we'd be fucked.
Yeah.
You know? That'd be the fire department would be coming.
No, you can't.
Know what I'm saying?
You can't. Yeah, that crosses the line.
Yeah.
So
what are we drinking now?
That we just tasted is a little bit higher proof.
Yes. So this one that I just poured is our overproof. So it's going to be at 114.5 proof.
Sure. Yeah. Can I just taste a little bit more of that as well? Thank you.
Yeah, and so
it's the same flavor profile, but
slightly different. We take one. It still uses both of the yeast that we use, but it's more skewed towards one of them, which we push into extra long fermentation.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's less really, smoky.
I find it much more molasses. Mm-hmm.
A
little sweeter, less smoky. No.
Yeah. It's less of the product using the yeast that creates the smokiness, and more of the other one, which is what creates the grassiness, and so we let that's it nice. Ferment even longer, and so that's what gets those really cooling, limey notes
that's
on
really
the back
fucking
end.
Good, dude.
I've never had a rum.
This is really like fucking this. Good.
Thank I've you. Never had a rum like this.
And you guys are releasing this when and where? God damn, this is good.
Right now, it's in our tasting room, and. We'll be distributing it soon.
The grassiness and there's like a citriness to it almost too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
is it safe strong. To say without crossing any lines that you recognize that it is? It's so obviously rum, but it's such a departure as well.
Oh, yes.
From what most people would think of
rum is typically one note sugary.
But super delicious.
Yes. You know? So we basically wanted to create something completely different, and that's why we took so long and really just going through all these trials and getting different opinions from people. And actually, our first release we submitted to the American Distilling Institute. They have an annual judging of craft spirits, and I think it included over 800 spirits in total. And I'm not sure how many rums in particular, but we ended up winning. Best rum overall across unaged and aged rums.
Wow!
With our first release, so we were
serious.
We were super super humbled, and but we were like, okay, so people, this is accepted, because we knew it was a risk going out to market with something that is not what people might be expecting with rum.
Right.
Well, because
right.
you were just saying you opened up the episode talking about the fact that there's more latitude with rum versus like a whiskey where it's got like narrowly defined parameters.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you define, what makes rum a rum? Is it the sugar?
It comes from a sugarcane product, mm-hmm. and it is distilled below 189.5 proof.
Okay.
And vodka,
and that's it?
Vodka's at 190. So that there's not much of a difference in
between vodka and rum.
The requirements for it.
Interesting.
And then, but then there's the
so
yeast.
You could almost call this a vodka, but vodka doesn't use the sugarcane.
It can.
There's a local distiller that uses sugarcane.
Yeah.
Crescent Vodka, I believe, is sugarcane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe
vodka.
So.
Yep.
And so our rum does not come off distills that high a proof, so it's nowhere near a vodka. For that, you do need column stills, which is not what we're set up for and not what we really ever wanted to do. And so with pot stills, like I said, it's less efficient. We get a lower distillate straight off the still. It comes in about an average of 140 for a given run. And so it's never going to go that high. But that's what we wanted.
Yeah.
So I understand y'all are a newer distillery and everything, but do y'all have any sort of barrels or anything you're aging any of the rums in?
Yeah, we have, as of last week, we have 99 5 and 10 gallon barrels laid down. The oldest is from December. And so we've pulled samples at 4 months, and we'll start pulling more samples probably in the fall.
Okay.
So they're mostly ex-bourbon barrels. So they're taking some really, really nice characteristics from the barrels. We don't need to age them for very long because, like I said, they're small.
Isn't it true that rum is not typically aged very long, even in the aged ones, right? Is that true or not?
It can be,
right?
Yeah. It depends. And with a small barrel, nothing needs to be aged quite as long. It's like, this would never be aged for 25 years. It would all disappear in a 5 gallon barrel.
Right.
It would just turn into sugar.
It would evaporate.
Right.
You know? Oh, yeah. With a little like sugar crust on the side of the barrel.
Yeah.
And as you taste it, there's a lot of flavor already in the rum, naturally, and so we don't need the barrels to give it a ton of extra flavor. It's more of letting it rest for a little bit, taking out some of those really nice flavors, and it actually takes on color super quickly without. And that one of our things is we refuse to add any color to it. All the samples.
So no artificial coloring.
Right. Yeah. So that's why we won't release a dark rum, just because what you typically think of for a dark rum is caramel color added, because that's never going to come out of a barrel. You know, black is.
What kind of color does it actually come out of the barrels when y'all do the testing on that?
Like a whiskey.
Okay.
Yeah. So the 4 month sample was probably slightly diluted from a typical, like the color you think of a whiskey, but we have 1 5-liter barrel that, you know, is super tiny, and so after 5 months in that, it was a pretty nice brown, but never really like.
But still black. Like kind of
that kind of looking. Yeah, black thing, right? Yeah. Huh. It's don't take this the wrong way. It feels like the rum that pirates drank. Like that. Yeah. That's how it strikes me. You know. I mean, whether that's true or not.
Because it's a little harder than, because when I think about rum, I think about like.
It's because it has the molasses flavor.
Right, and the smokiness.
You know, exactly.
But when I think about rum, I think about like my swinging 1970s parents. You know what I mean? Like that whole era when they just dumped sugary ass Bacardi rum into a daiquiri.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like every weekend.
That's right.
And then they just, I was like, who's fucking who over here? When I was a 9-year-old.
I did finally get some actual, like, Cuban Bacardi for the first time.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
How was that? Nice. Uh-huh. But this is a real liquor. This is a real spirit. Like, that was.
I mean, I would say, like, in my experience, because I was one of the owners of Lost Love Lounge. And, you know, we had distributors coming by all the time and dropping product on us. And people would regale me with stories of this spirit or that spirit is great. And I always told people that the best spirit that we had in the house, which was surprising to me because I'm not typically a rum guy. Got some storms outside of the CAC here, folks, but it just adds to the whole tales of rum that are going on here. But Zaya rum, which I thought was a fine product, I was just like, I think this is the best spirit that we have amongst the kind of mass-produced spirits that we have. This is such a complete departure and so good. And you know, it not to be sentimental, but it makes me proud that people are doing that in New Orleans. So congratulations.
Thank you.
For that, you know, because we need people to have that kind of entrepreneurial spirit and to produce things out of the city of note, and I think that you guys have done that.
Awesome, thank you. Right. We're like I said, it's been a whirlwind. We started getting distribution last month at this point, and so we're making it out into liquor stores and bars and it at an exponential pace at this point.
Get that. So are you tracking like which bars it's in? I mean, does International provide you with some data in terms of where the placement is? And
we get a monthly report.
Oh,
so it's a little, you know, having only been in with them for a month and a half now, they've been very good about giving us a little more up to date than, because waiting a month is, you know, the entire time we've been distributed. But generally, yes, we do get reports from them. Andrew, my business partner, and I go out to a lot of bars ourselves. There was one day a couple weeks ago, we went to 23 bars in one day to sample,
right.
And
right.
Obviously
hey,
couldn't drink it any, or we drank it the last one. But you know, just 9 a.m. to 11 p.m., just, you know, going and talking to people, trying to get our word out there, because like I said, we're super tiny. So we're much more of a grassroots marketing campaign than some bigger places would be.
Well, you got a nice kind of uniform going on here as well, I have to say.
You
got to
sell those shirts. Those will make money.
Right. He's got
that's actually Spencer's jam, though. That is, I mean, seriously, that shirt
it's
is
a blue short sleeve polo, navy blue short sleeve polo.
Like the flamingos.
Shirt, yes. with pink flamingos on it. Coupled with some pink shorts.
It's pretty fucking rad. Yeah.
It's good. It's
where
good.
Do you get your shirts from? Who does them for you?
We just find shirts that we like, and then we have pack specialties out of Morgan City to do embroidery on them.
Oh, that's killer. What's it called?
tax specialties.
Okay. Nice. Folks, it's summertime in New Orleans.
So, one last question then. How did you get the design done for the bottle? And how did you arrive at a decision?
So we worked with Angela Gelso out of New York. She, at the same time we were in the planning phases for our brand, she was someone that we knew who was starting her own spirits and wine labeling consulting company. And so we were her first client, and you know, over the course of a fairly long time, because we all had multiple jobs at the same time, we just kind of would share images that we liked characteristics of with her, and she would do the same, and we would just have back and forth with that. And then she was awesome about keeping us involved in the every couple of weeks she would give us updates on different aspects of the label that she thought could work, and we were pretty hands-on in the whole design of it.
Nice. Yeah, it's really nice. It's a little bit of a throwback to a kind of a classic spirits feel. And
like a 1920s kind of look to it.
Yeah, a little bit of that, and it's high contrast also, which is where you need to be.
Mm-hmm. In order, classy looking rum.
Yeah, it's a classy looking rum.
Because you're going to see it on the shelf.
Right. You're going to see it on the shelf in a dimly lit room.
Exactly, right. Because of the contrast.
Yeah, that's right. And
yeah.
So we actually, on the back, we included the pronunciation, Roulaison,
right.
And the meaning, because you know we figured those would be the first two questions everyone asks.
And what are the answers?
So it's Roulaison, and it's the French grill word for the shirt.
Exactly.
Shirt
artist. Yeah.
Right. Well,
drunk.
Well, you're like, as he's explaining that, you're like, he already did that early on the podcast. And also, Spencer, I just have to say, for this episode, has had more questions than he's ever had, because we're talking about booze.
I like alcohol. I'm sorry.
So, all right. Well, Patrick, I want to thank you for coming on, man. It's really great to have a local entrepreneur on the show, and people are doing great. Yeah, but I just want to say one last thing. Also, is that must have felt great when that first truck rolled out with your product on it, right?
Oh yes.
Isn't that a day? That had to be a day that you guys were waiting for forever.
It was. Every milestone that we've hit so far is kind of, you envision in your head and you imagine just kind of celebrating afterwards, but when in reality it's as soon as it hits, it's immediately you're like, all right, what's next? It's, you know, you don't even, you're so excited by it that you just want to keep going and not really even take time and really think about like how big that just was. It was just like, what's next for us?
Yeah, right, exactly. I know. It must have been a great feeling for about 30 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you move on to the next mile.
Right.
So what's the website, social media, everything?
Roulaison.com, at Roulaison for Instagram and Twitter, and / Roulaison for Facebook.
Let me ask you this. You're on Broad in Washington. There's that corridor is blowing up.
It is.
We got the Broad Street Theater.
Yeah. We actually...
Where exactly are you guys located?
So we're right next to Propeller. We're behind Laurel Street Bakery.
Yep.
Our entrance is kind of off of the off of a parking lot that you can either get to from the side of Propeller, or there's a walkway from Broad into our space. We're at the end of the alleyway. But it's a great location. Today we have Broad Street Cider and Ale having a soft opening right next to us. So we're going to have a cidery next to us. We have a chocolate manufacturer in the front of our building.
That's
so
right.
It's a fun little spot.
Yeah, it's really blowing up over there.
Yeah, like sure.
Chocolate, rum, and cider. That's a good trifecta you got.
That's
going.
Like Jackie Dudakis' whole thing over there.
Propeller. Yeah,
yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep, she's involved with that. But just want to thank you again for coming on, and you know, once again, folks, you can find it. It's Roulaison, Roulaison, Roulaison Rum, and we already mentioned all the social media and everything. And we'll catch up with you next time.
You should try it. It's really,
really. Make sure that you get down there. Your tastings are between 3 and 7, typically, right?
3 and 7 on Wednesday through Friday, 1 to 7 on Saturdays, and we're also in a lot of liquor stores around town now. We're at
Elio's,
Keith & Co., Elio's, Martin's, Spirit Wine. So you can come go check us out or come by the tasting room.
Nice.
Great.
Patrick, thank you, man. Happy Tells the Cocktail, everybody. It's been a good weekend, and thanks for tuning in.
It's a good life. We've had a lot of fun.
It's a good life, babe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans. We'll catch up with you. We got some more guests coming on, so click on the next one. We're going to be doing four of these podcasts, which are going to be our Tales of the Cocktail podcast for 2017. So click on them, folks, and
the
we'll
official.
Do it again. See, you got to give me some kind of heads up, man, when you do it, because
the official podcast on Tales of the Cocktail 2017.
The official unofficial.
I like the subtlety you finish it with.
All right. See you next time.